This week, Rob mourns the loss of Andrew Breitbart, Jeremy gives up Drudge for Lent, and Jerry searches for his name on targetedkillings.gov. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
The Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now.
Welcome to episode 23. Now. It is March 8th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
And welcome. We are, let's see, what are we doing this week? We're talking about terrorism. But before we get into that, I wanted to make sure I let everybody know that we've got a new way for people to interact with us. Because as you know, we live on your feedback, and we're always looking for ways to make it easier for you to reach us. So you can now visit our website, of course, and leave us a comment there. You can send us a note to feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com, or you can join our snazzy new forum. That's right. Go to forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com, create an account, and add your voice to the thousands of threads that are already there. Or you can start your own. And we will respond to you there or live on the show, whatever your preference is. We just wanted to open up another avenue for our listeners to talk to us. So check out the forum, and we're now going to talk about terrorism and what defines terrorism. Rob, do you have a definition of terrorism?
I do.
Okay.
But I'm not going to tell you what it is.
All right.
I'm going to terrorize you.
Emotional terrorism.
That's right. Terrorize you with suspense.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Short episode. Yeah, I think I've gotten into conversations before about what constitutes terrorism, or more specifically, the agenda that I'm really hammering on is this perception of a liberal bias in the application of what terrorism is, which I would. My goal here is to perhaps dispel if anybody has such a bias or thought or inkling.
Okay.
And I thought maybe the best way to do it, I'll have my own little opinions as we go along here, but maybe we can like spin the wheel. We can spin the killing wheel.
The wheel of terror.
That's right. And it'll kind of spin around and like just like Wheel of Fortune without the Vanna White. And we'll hit an episode and you get to say terrorism, not terrorism. And maybe by empirical, you know, quantity of data, we'll be able to come up with a definition. So are you guys ready to play?
Sure.
Ready.
Maybe we'll start with let's start with an easy one. How about the Virginia Tech shooter?
Terrorism.
Whoa, my goodness.
Sorry.
So
sorry. That was rude. Go
so,
on.
So to inform the listeners with misinformed facts that I'll give you, I guess this was a few years ago. Guy at school shot up a bunch of kids at the Virginia Tech campus. I think he ended up shooting himself. I think that's what happened. Yeah, if you know about it, go ahead. Terrorism, not terrorism. Asian kid.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'm going to say no also.
Interesting.
Do you need an explanation, or is it okay just to say no and move on?
Let's move on. I want to go ahead and say no.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and say, let's pick today's Pittsburgh shootings. There was shootings in Pittsburgh. I don't know anything about it, but I'll make assumptions.
At a psychiatric clinic?
Yeah.
I didn't read the story. I just saw that two people were killed.
Yeah. You can go ahead and say terrorism, not terrorism. You don't have to know what you're talking about.
I don't know enough details.
All right.
So I'll abstain.
But
it doesn't seem like it.
Wasn't.
All right, moving on. Let's
shooting holes in Rob's.
No, we're starting slow here. We'll get speed. Let's go right to David Koresh in Waco, the Waco compound. When was this? This was in the 80s, wasn't it?
It was actually 1993.
Nice. Can you have facts up? I don't have facts.
No, I just remember because I was on my way to spring break and driving through Waco as it was going on. So it was 19 years ago this month.
Did you stop and take a look or what?
No. No, because the standoff had already begun, because I think the standoff started in like late February or something that year.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, February 28th says Wiki. You're good.
And went, you know, for 30 plus days before they finally, you know, before the terrorists moved in and set fire to the place.
Oh, wow.
Whoa, okay.
So I guess that probably revealed my position on that.
All right, yeah, and why was he supposedly in there? I forgot what his reasons were.
Why was he in there?
Right, right.
It was his whole compound.
Right. Well, what right does he have to hang out?
He's a religious leader.
Okay.
Well, that has nothing to do with his right to. I mean, it's his right to what? To live in his house?
Yeah, yeah. I need to see where that's spelled out. No. I was just wondering what the dispute was.
Well, it started with the ATF trying to serve a search warrant, and they denied them entry into the building, and
gotcha.
That erupted into a gunfight, and I believe one of the ATF agents was either injured or killed. I don't remember now, but that's what started the standoff, because after that they started calling in all the, you know, federal agents and local cops, and eventually the local National Guard was called in to demolish the place. And
what was the original reason for them wanting to serve that search warrant, or what prompted them to get a search warrant?
The ATF,
I don't remember,
had reason to believe that they had a cache of illegal weapons on the premises.
Okay,
that's right.
And, you know, that by itself is bogus. As we now know, because the Supreme Court has ruled that, you know, you can have guns in your house no matter where you are or for whatever reason.
There were weapons of tiny destruction.
Yeah, right.
They had actionable intelligence.
Weapons of limited destruction.
Right. Okay, so you say there was terrorism in this case committed by the ATF.
Yeah, the ATF and the whole, you know, alphabet soup of agencies that followed, and it culminated with, you know, they set fire to the compound, which they claim was an accident as a result of tear gas grenades or something that were fired through the windows. They claim that started the fire, but you know, there were 86 people killed there, I think.
Wow. Really? I didn't remember that.
I could be wrong about the number, but I think that's...
I'm trying to find it here on the old internets. Yeah, I think it was a big deal.
I just remember my mom saying, oh, good grief, they're still talking about this.
oh, good grief.
Wasn't real big on important news like the Berlin Wall coming down. And
76 people died in the fire, including more than 20 children, 2 pregnant women, and the sect leader David Koresh.
Wow,
fascinating. Unless you have a terrorism, no terrorism to weigh in, Jeremy, we could segue into related issues.
Well, that's a tough one. I don't think, in the sense that we're talking about it, I would say terrorism. Obviously, some not so good use of law enforcement going on there. Although this guy was a nutbag, I will say that. David Koresh.
I think Jeremy or Jerry would fight to the death to protect his right to be a nutbag.
Yeah, I'm not saying he doesn't have a right to be a nutbag. Now, if he was hooking it up with the young women of his congregation, then...
I'm sure those guys don't really do that.
No.
Not like the Jerry Jones or whatever his name was.
Jim Jones?
Jim Jones, there you go.
Jerry Jones owns the Cowboys.
Yeah, I get them mixed up.
He's probably guilty of it, too.
Yeah, still a nutbag. Right. Different kind of nutbag.
So that flows into the Oklahoma City bombing, which is said to have a relationship with the Waco incident. So yeah. Timothy McVeigh and his old pal, Terry Nichols.
Same day, April 19th.
April 19th, that's right. So drives up to the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City and with a big truck full of fertilizer and blows it up, killing many people.
Mm-hmm.
Including children, because there's a daycare in there.
Indeed. Terrorism, not terrorism.
Terrorism.
Yeah. I mean, by the conventional definition, yeah.
All right. How about the Norway dude, whatever that dude's name was? I'm very well prepared tonight. The guy shows up in a boat on a Christian campsite and proceeds to start shooting a bunch of people and claims that it is to wake up the Norwegian people to the coming caliphate of Muslims into their country and they should take arms. Terrorism, not terrorism.
I'm leaning towards terror on that one, but it's tough when you have those mass shootings like that. They think they can go either way.
Yeah. I think it also, I mean, we're kind of getting to the scale of the attack figures into it, in my mind, you know. Like,
yes.
How so?
The number of people that are, you know, killed or injured or whatever, it has to surpass a certain threshold before you can really call it terrorism.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't know. Because if the, you know, it'd be different if the perpetrator had published some sort of manifesto prior to, you know, the act, whatever the act is.
Didn't he?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he did in this case. I'm not familiar with it. I mean,
I believe he did.
Okay. Well, then maybe it is.
I think he, as I understand it, it was a well-planned out manifesto that was meant to be found at the end of this. He had headshots taken of him. He wrote that it's important in this coming war to make sure that you have, you know, that you're a good looking individual and well kept and that so that when they take you in you have a certain kind of appearance. I mean, it wasn't just an act of passion. It was a planned event to portray a political viewpoint to go over that view. Andrew Breivik, his name was.
Okay. Okay. Mm. So what are we driving towards here?
Well, here's what I'm driving at. And then let's do one more on our little game. How about the Fort Hood shooting? This is where it all kind of comes to a head here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So what happens in the Fort Hood shooting? So you have kind of a army individual, an active duty doctor, I guess he was, or at least trained in some medical fashion, but obviously a poor
psychiatrist, wasn't he?
Right. Poor employee, Muslim, gets worried about people from Fort Hood getting sent to a Muslim country to do damage and starts shooting a bunch of people. Terrorism, not terrorism.
Yes. They know.
Right. Okay. So the point of this is for me that it becomes terrorism if the act that is being perpetrated is meant to have some like political or symbolic view outside of what the act was. So the Virginia Tech guy, he just wants to shoot a bunch of people. You know, the Columbine kids, you know, they go crazy, want to shoot a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I think that's something, but I wouldn't call it terrorism because their main goal was to shoot a bunch of people. And so when it comes down to someone like the Norway shooting or the Oklahoma City situation, those or 9/11, you know, our classic terrorism example.
Yeah.
You know, it's not meant 9/11 wasn't perpetrated because they really didn't like those buildings. You know, it was meant to send a message and to strike fear or terror upon a people and to extend beyond what the incident was itself. That's why it's all coordinated and exciting and TV centric and all that. So what brings me to this issue is all the interesting stuff that happened with the Fort Hood shooter. So now we have this guy who's obviously off his rocker and he's a Muslim though. But it, to me, the Fort Hood thing's kind of right in the middle. It's an interesting one because I think the guy obviously was had a motive other than just shooting random people. But I think he was also just a pure crazy person. So I think it's kind of right on the middle. But what I couldn't stand here, the reason why I'm bringing all this up, is there were many charges from the right that, oh, we're pussyfooting around this issue. Just call a terrorist what a terrorist is. He's a terrorist, you know, like as if there was some kind of liberal conspiracy to try not to call Muslims terrorists, which I just completely don't believe. I think that case was kind of in the middle. I think Oklahoma City was obviously terrorism. 9/11, obviously terrorism. Norway thing was a Christian form of terrorism. But I didn't hear too many complaints about that being labeled terrorism when obviously that's what that was. So it was just another – it's just, for me, it's an example of silly conservative outrage again. You know, they won't call this guy a terrorist. I think the Fort Hood one's I don't know if he was or not.
Well, wasn't he consulting with a cleric on what he should be doing?
Right. Yeah, maybe he was
– a radical – cleric?
Maybe he was just a enemy soldier, you know, or a plant, you know, because he was killing people that he thought were going to kill his people. Maybe he just thought he was fighting a war.
Well, they do think they're fighting a war. It's a holy war.
Right, right. But I think his purpose wasn't to strike fear amongst the Fort Hoodites. I think his purpose was to kill enemies of his people, which isn't that the purpose of our army as well?
Sure.
There you go. I don't know. I don't think as far as the Fort Hood thing, I think I can go either way. I don't really have a strong opinion about it. What I completely object to and why I find this an interesting topic was the conservative outrage I heard about even the discussion about whether he was terrorist. It's like, well, you got a person shooting somebody and he's Muslim. Like, that's terrorist. And that's not my definition.
Right. I would agree with that, and I thought the same thing when the story first broke, that, you know, first of all, that he, you know, he had one of those names that, you know, we've all kind of become programmed to you know, be prejudiced against, and, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and I don't think that was terrorism, and the main reason being that there was no message. You know, like you said, there was no symbolism to it. It was just a guy who snapped and killed a bunch of people.
Right.
And that seems to happen quite frequently in this country. That,
yeah, why is that?
Well, that could probably be an entire episode all by itself. But, you know, killing a bunch of people to draw attention to your cause is terrorism. In my opinion.
Right, right.
The tactics that are used can be, you know, like you said, the Columbine shooters that, you know, if they had had some sort of cause they were promoting there, that would have been a case of terrorism, but they didn't.
Right, right. Well, I agree. I agree. There are people out there that just the fact that you're weighing it one side or the other would claim that you've been brainwashed by the lamestream media.
Yeah. So one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, though.
Indeed.
And this is, you know, the part of this topic that interests me the most, because we're awfully quick to label people as terrorists, and, you know, it seems like the same person in a different context would not, you know, a same person doing the same things in a different context would not be considered a terrorist.
Oh, sure.
And that's the part of it that interests me.
Right. We have the founders of our country, which were
right.
Which were pretty good terrorists themselves.
I mean, the Boston Tea Party was an act of terrorism to some extent, although there was no loss of life involved. It was still a flagrant act of vandalism that cost a huge amount of money.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that terrorism, though, unless you want to say economic.
Oh, but I would call it terrorism. I mean, they weren't really mad at tea. You know, they were
right.
they were conducting an act to send a message.
Yeah, they were lashing out at, you know.
So it was a protest terrorism then? I would call it a protest.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, I did hear that in the media, that a lot of people were calling the Occupy Wall Street guys, especially the ones that, you know, did the, what they call it, black body. Is that what they call it? When they all showed up in black and they were all wearing, like, ski masks and stuff so they could remain anonymous.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. A lot of the Occupy protests in Oakland, they did that. And, you know, that I don't consider that terrorism necessarily, but I did hear that in the news. People were calling it that. And I think that's just a... You know, it's a shorthand that people use to label something they don't agree with, you know?
Right, right.
Just call them a terrorist, and they're automatically bad, and whatever they're doing is wrong.
Especially now when we have the war on terror.
Yeah, but, yeah, like you said, all the guys who signed the Declaration of Independence, they're all terrorists. From you know, England's point of view at the time, that's what...
They were the awesome kind. They like terrorized by writing documents with crazy flourishy letters in it. I mean, I'd go for some of those kind of terrorists right now, you know, write you a really nasty letter.
Well, I'm sure that once accounts of the Boston Massacre made it back to jolly old England, you know, we were being portrayed as, you know, just savages that...
Oh, sure.
Deserve nothing but the onslaught of the British army and the full force of the king. I don't know. It obviously the winners write the history, right? So we consider
that is true.
We consider the framers to be our heroes, to be our pantheon. And if the Brits had won, all those guys would have gone down in history as dirty, rotten criminals that, you know, hung from the nearest tree, as they should have.
But more importantly, maybe we should talk about the movie Red Dawn. When that one came out.
Patrick Swayze at his best. Man.
Oh, man.
If only they had included some dancing in there, it would be the perfect movie.
And so what's the connection to terrorism there? I'm not seeing
it. He had freedom fighters.
Right. And you know, I haven't seen it in a while, which is sad. You should watch it once a year.
I watch it every Sunday.
That's right. But you know, don't they walk into the Russian's office and blow it up? And yeah, I mean, I like to watch it now from the modern perspective, because basically the kids we're rooting for, the Wolverines,
right,
that we're rooting for, are exactly the same kind of tactics that we're fighting against now, like.
But, in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Sure, right.
Yeah.
Right. But back in the 80s, that was the underdog, you know, we could root for them. But now, like, I don't think you can make a Red Dawn right now. You know, can you really make a Red Dawn about, you certainly can have the Russians and such, you know, but I mean the whole idea of rooting for American terrorists would just be...
Well, we don't have a big boogeyman enemy that we can pin all of our fears and...
Right. That's why we created terrorism.
Yeah, I think that's true to a large extent. I mean,
need an enemy.
Yeah, the Berlin Wall fell, and suddenly we've got this huge military sitting around, nothing to do. We gotta now. You know, we're gonna stray into some tinfoil hat conspiracy theory territory here with, you know, 9/11 being a false flag attack and all of that. But I think, to a certain extent, that's true. There's a military-industrial complex, you know, that Eisenhower warned us about. It still exists, and it's larger than ever. And the people involved in that you know, make their livings, their business is war. And if there's no war to fight, they ain't making money. So there's an incentive there, is all I'm saying. I'm not trying to claim that, you know, any of this stuff we've been involved in is, you know, being orchestrated by the Illuminati or the Bilderbergers or what have you, but maybe it is.
That wouldn't be the first event that was orchestrated or claimed to be orchestrated, I should say. to start a war.
Yeah. But since you mentioned the 80s, I'd also mention a film that probably isn't as well known. It's called Brazil, and it came out in 1985. It's
Oh, yeah, it's pretty well known. It didn't win Best Picture or something, didn't it?
I don't know if it did or not. Anyway, terrorism is one of the main topics of the film. And, the description here, I'll just read this. This is from IMDb. A bureaucrat in a retro future world tries to correct an administrative error and himself becomes an enemy of the state. And so, there's a lot in the movie that's funny just because they illustrate the bureaucracy. They go, to some absurd lengths to illustrate how bad the bureaucracy is. But, terrorism comes up a lot in the movie, and there's actually at least one scene I can remember where there's a terrorist attack on a restaurant with a bunch of people in it. And, what's interesting to me about it is this is 1985, okay? So obviously it's pre-9/11. It's what terrorism meant in the 80s. And I think it's substantively different from what we think of today. Like, the term has been redefined. And it kind of speaks to what you were saying, Rob, about, the Fort Hood shooting. Terrorism is anytime, some brown person with a gun or a bomb does something bad.
Right.
And that's kind of what we call terrorism now. But that's not what it always meant.
Yeah.
Well, you bring up the restaurant. This made me think of another. Remember that incident in Texas? I think it was called Luby's Diner.
Yeah.
Guys shot a bunch of people.
Yep.
That. Terrorism, not terrorism. I don't remember his motive. I don't think it was, but
no.
As we're talking about it, it seemed like it was just another nut job.
Interesting you bring that incident up, though, because one of the gals who was in the restaurant, and I believe one or both of her parents were shot by that guy, and she had a gun that day, but it was in the glove box of her car, and she didn't bring it in because at the time Texas did not have a concealed carry law. So
yes.
Legally she couldn't bring it in. And she,
I remember her. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. So, I mean, she worked very hard to change the law in Texas, and it is now, they do have a concealed carry law there, and she was instrumental in that. I think she actually ran for state office, either their House of Representatives or State Senate or something. I don't remember her name now. I'll have to look that up. But, yeah, so I didn't mean to get off into that topic.
Yeah.
We might cover that in a future episode, too. But, okay, so what have we said about terrorism here? what's our conclusion?
I think we agree more than I thought we would, I guess.
Really?
But it's something to keep in mind, though, as things happen.
And do we all agree that a war on terror is a nebulous and self-defeating idea?
We'll go ahead and agree on that.
Yeah, yeah, because it's.
But it, I mean, what it is as
an idea. What does that mean exactly?
But it's absurd as a phrase, but it's a wink and a nod. It's something that we're supposed to know what he means when he says war on terror,
Yeah.
It's yeah. People with beards and guns.
And don't take my comment that it's a self-defeating idea. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have taken some steps to root out Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or, that's a whole another topic. I think we've pushed the boundaries on what makes sense. Not we in our discussion. I mean, we, the wars we're fighting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll hit up a little bit of listener feedback that we've gotten recently. So we'll be right back. All right, we're back. And we want to just pull on this thread a little bit further, I think.
Pull it.
And you know, one story that kind of sparked this discussion that we didn't even talk about yet was Eric Holder, Attorney General Eric Holder, had a speech earlier this week or last week, and he was defending the U.S. government's, or I should say the Obama administration's, rationale for using these targeted killings of Americans specifically. And, you know, we didn't even touch on that before when we were talking about this. So I wanted to bring that up. And then and Jeremy also wanted to talk about Guantanamo Bay. So first of all, what do you guys think about these targeted killings?
I think it's a convenient escape hatch for them. I think it's a load of crap, really.
Yeah.
The way they're talking about it, and they, instead of, it almost seems like they're just talking themselves into or justifying what they already did.
Yeah, right.
And no, I don't want to hear any of these, slippery slope, you're saying slippery slope. No, that's not, but it's a lot of latitude. That, and you see, when the government has a lot of latitude, what they're willing to do.
Right.
I mean, they won't even, sorry, I am getting fired up, Rob.
Getting fired up.
You know, Obama said he was going to vote down this pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, because they didn't have the planned route. He's never been shown a planned route this pipeline's going to take. There's not enough information. Gotta veto it. Yet, they're willing to make this broad statement about who they can, which Americans they can kill. This ill-defined, nebulous statement, and you won't build a pipeline, but you'll go whack a bunch of people.
So, who did they kill? I'm a little behind on this one.
We actually talked about this episode 13 or 14, I think, about Anwar al-Awlaki, who is an American-born Islamic cleric. And at the time, he was living in Yemen when they called in this drone strike and killed him. But, you know, he was born in New Mexico. He's a U.S. citizen. Just so happens, you know, he was a player in the, quote, war on terror. So he was targeted. And, you know, here's a quote from Holder's speech. He said, "Some have argued that the president is required to get permission from a federal court before taking action against a United States citizen who is a senior operational leader of Al-Qaeda or associated forces. This is simply not accurate. Due process and judicial process are not one and the same, particularly when it comes to national security. The Constitution guarantees due process, not judicial process." Now, I don't really know what that means. That sounds like he's just, you know.
Sounds like weasel wording.
Yeah, he's defining his own terms so that he can
ignore them. Due process being, we went through the process to define how we can take action against this person. Judicial process being, we brought him to trial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and no, I would say, well, it's due process. I mean, you basically put him on trial and executed him all at once. And, you know, there was no due process. And he's a U.S. citizen. You know, that just makes it that much worse. It's not even that, you know, we were going after some foreigner, some, you know.
Is it any better or worse that we would go after foreigners like this? Where do we draw the line and say, this guy has checked out of America and we no longer consider him an American. We've revoked his, maybe not citizenship, but we've revoked your right to be an American. You are now an enemy of America based on your activity and behavior. And therefore, we can decide when you get to check out.
Right.
I don't.
I say go ahead and do it.
What? Whoa.
It's my conservative
lovable,
side.
Lovable lefty, not so lovable today.
That's right.
Man, where's That's right. the love?
It's because Obama's bringing it. I don't want to hear any.
No,
that's not the only thing. That's not the only thing, but it sounds like some. It sounds.
I still scoff at your claim.
So
shouldn't matter. Shouldn't matter who is in office.
Right. I it doesn't matter to me. I'm fine if this was W doing it.
How can the U.S. government possibly justify executing a U.S. citizen without any due process at all?
Because he's got a beard.
So here's the rationalization from Holder. Here are the criteria they use to determine whether or not they can, you know, do one of these targeted killings. First, the person has to be overseas. Okay, so they're not going to call in a drone strike here in the U.S., at least for now.
Not yet.
Yeah. Right. The person has to have a senior position in Al-Qaeda. Okay, I don't know if it's just
Al-Qaeda. Why just Al-Qaeda? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, the threat has to be imminent, whatever threat that is. The target must be in a place where the foreign government can't or won't capture him. And the person has to be actively taking up arms against U.S. forces or against U.S. citizens.
Sounds like a pretty good list.
Yeah, I agree. That does sound pretty well constrained.
Well,
how do they define actively taking up arms?
They don't.
Is that?
That's
okay.
Up to the president's discretion.
I changed my mind. I'm all for this now.
Okay, well, all I can say is don't go overseas.
That's right.
Do they say how they have to allow the other country to attempt to arrest this person? Or
no.
No, yeah. I don't know. It stinks. I don't like the idea of them having the okay to press the button on some American, but this guy's clearly an enemy.
Yeah, where'd he go, Jeremy?
Enemy of the state, just like Will Smith.
Well, okay.
He had a beard, too.
But who's to decide that?
Obama. Eric. He's all-knowing. Just ask Rob.
Eric Holder.
So you trust his judgment?
No.
And who's
not at all.
State. All right, then.
You know, sometimes you got to work the dark side. I like it. I think it sounds reasonable. I've always been one to kind of give, I don't know, this is where I kind of give like the W's and the Cheney's. Like I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt on some of this stuff. It's just the way I roll. See,
I don't trust any of them to make this sort of a judgment call. I mean, this is the slipperiest of slopes. If you say that it's okay for one person to decide who should be killed and who shouldn't, you've basically given up all legitimacy of your government.
Yeah, I could see it being dangerous. But I think if you're sitting in the office, I think you pull the trigger. You got to protect the American people.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And
domestic.
So, yeah, Guantanamo. What are your feelings on that, Jeremy?
Nice beach. I don't know.
It's better weather.
Yeah. I don't have strong feelings. I really don't. I brought that up more as it popped into my head when we were discussing this, but I don't understand what they're doing there right now.
Yeah.
I don't know who they're continuing to hold, why they released some and not others. But there have been reports, I don't know how accurate, probably maybe not very accurate, of guys that were released. They end up fighting them again in Afghanistan. I guess, maybe. I don't know. But how is that? I don't remember when this happened, but I started looking at it as a prisoner of war idea. Like, you know, that during Vietnam, we had these guys who were prisoners of war, and it was, I'm sure it was a lot worse for them than these clowns down in Guantanamo getting their new $750,000 soccer field and everything. But same idea. They're being held. They're prisoners of war.
They're enemy combatants.
Well, yes, officially, but
for how long?
Indefinitely. Forever.
Yeah, and that's the point.
The war on terror is never going to end, so all of the enemy combatants will be that way forever.
There will be a day of no terror. Flowers and perfumes.
Unicorns and rain.
Mm-hmm. Right, so what gives, if you're worried about the government's right to whack somebody, what about the right to hold people indefinitely?
Yeah, well, what's the...
Yes.
I mean, couldn't they just exterminate everybody that's there at Gitmo? I mean, if we're okay... Well, seriously.
Theoretically, they could.
Yeah. I mean, if we're okay with calling in drone strikes on, you know, some ill-defined set of terrorists, then why not kill them all? Let God sort them out.
You wouldn't even need a drone either.
No.
No, you could just stage a few prison breaks. And, how many are being held down there? I don't even know.
It's classified.
Well, it not really. I think the number of prisoners is not classified. I think it's somewhere between 400 and 500.
Okay, so you staged 3 prison riots, and 120 inmates were killed today. Do that 3 times, and you're home free. Hey,
pretty much done.
Oh, yep.
We can all come home now. Man, how cynical are we?
That's right. But it is. It raises a. I mean, to me, I think there's two factors. One is I think when we get all hopped up about these conflicts, we're like really good at the starting part of the conflict, not so good at the ending.
Right.
You know, and we don't really think about the whole story, but boy, when something fires up, boy, everybody's all excited, you know, just like the Iraq thing.
Yeah.
You know, calling for us to go into Syria now.
That's right. Maybe Iraq was a good idea. Maybe it wasn't, you know, that's a whole different topic, but it was analogous to the healthcare debate. It's like, why all the speed, you know? Why the sudden rush, you know?
Yeah.
We've kind of had a healthcare problem in our nation for, you know, 50, 100, forever years, whatever it is. Like why do we got to fix it by Christmas, you know? Well, because there's other reasons, you know? It's the same thing with the Iraq thing. I think there's that. Now, and I wonder, this is more to a Jeremy kind of question. One thing I feel like is I wish we would be better at declaring war. You know, let's just
call it. Oh, yeah, we don't.
What happened to the good old days, you know, when we had actually
we don't do that anymore.
Why not?
We haven't declared war since 1941.
Let's dust off that book. Let's try it a couple times.
Well, you're right, and I was going to bring this up because all of the ethical and moral dilemmas that we're facing as a result of these actions are because we haven't declared war.
Because it puts too many restrictions on...
We can't call these people prisoners of war, and therefore we can't deal with them in well-defined ways, i.e. the Geneva Convention. So, you know, we have to come up with these euphemisms like enemy combatant and, you know...
Police action.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to do all of that if we would formally declare war, but... You can't formally declare war on terrorism because it doesn't exist. It's not a place. It's not a person. It's an idea. So
right.
So we play these word games.
So why don't we declare?
I come up with these lists of criteria of, you know, certain people that it's okay to kill.
Was it just that we couldn't get enough congressional votes? Was it just a vote counting thing?
What? For declaring war?
Yeah, why it wasn't.
Who are you
going to
declare war on?
Iraq.
Could have declared it on Iraq and Afghanistan, but I don't think he would have gotten the support because I think the term declare war has this, it's not a pretty term that people want to hang their name on and say, yeah, I voted to declare war.
Well, the problem in Afghanistan was the enemy was not Afghanistan. It was a, you know, loose
Taliban
group of people within that country, but they had no official affiliation. You know, I guess they were the de facto government of Afghanistan. So, I mean, it was a little less gray. But, you know, Iraq, we had no reason to declare war on Iraq. We were liberating the Iraqi people. That's not something you declare war to do, right? I mean, there has to be an act of war for somebody to declare war. So, I don't know. There's a lot of issues.
All right. All right, solve that problem. Moving on.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's jump into some listener feedback. We had a couple of comments from our listener, Nathan. He said in episode 20 that Rob had referenced Andrew Breitbart in episode 20, and 4 days later, Breitbart dies of a heart attack at the age of 43 under mysterious circumstances. Coincidence? I think not. So, Rob, you're being implicated there in the death of Andrew Breitbart.
No comment.
How do you plead?
I take the whatever amendment it is.
Okay. Fair
enough, Rob.
I don't believe in the Constitution.
Nathan also provided us a link, and I will include this in the show notes, to a video about the creature from Jekyll Island. So, and that's regarding the creation of the Federal Reserve and fractional reserve banking and all of that good stuff that we talked about a couple episodes ago. And so then Nathan also had this to say about episode 21 regarding our comments on A Bug's Life. I guess we brought that up. And he says, the symbolism of the ants versus the grasshoppers wasn't analogous to conservatives versus liberals. A more apt analogy would be that the grasshoppers were government agents and the ants were the regular Joe. The grasshoppers were merely collecting taxes from the ants, and the ants hire an unlikely band of mercenaries to help them fight their tyrannical oppressors, and in the end they are victorious. The ants gain their freedom, and the head of the grasshopper government is killed. A very happy ending indeed. Next time you watch it, look for the authority myth theme. It comes out pretty strongly in that movie.
Yeah, I think our main... Yeah, I guess since I brought it up, that movie, I had the actual symbolism wrong, but I think our point was that the movies had symbolism.
Right.
That so thanks for the synopsis.
Towards kids.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I think that brings us to the end. I'd like to thank all of our listeners once again. Remind you, our new forum is available. If you'd like to go out there and create an account and join in some of the discussions that are going on there in the forum, we will try to respond to you there. Or leave us a comment on our Facebook page if you like. That's facebook.com/MidwestPeace. So... that's it from us. We will see you next time.
Bye now.
Good night.
The Federal Reserve System, to most people, seems like it is an agency of the federal government. That's what I thought it was when I first started to research this topic. But it turns out that it's nothing of the kind. The Federal Reserve is a hybrid organization. It's a partnership between the federal government and the private banks. When you look at it deeper than that, its essence is neither as a government agency or a private company. In reality, it is a cartel. In other words, it's no different in essence than a banana cartel or a sugar cartel or an oil cartel. It's a grouping of the large private corporations in the field, banking, who have come together to create agreement between themselves to limit competition, to preserve their profits, and to make sure that no newcomers come in and take away their position.